I see all my old friends are here. If I may ask most politely and respectfully, please don't make this into a festive occasion. It's not a pop festival, but rather we are a serious group, not inclined to frivolity, but rather earnest, serious group of people who will want or desire to inquire into the whole complex problem of living. And if one may point out again, there is no speaker here, though he's sitting on the platform, but actually the speaker doesn't exist, because then you will be merely listening to the speaker and not actually investigating for yourself. So please, for me again, suggest most earnestly that there is no speaker, but we are together investigating, exploring, inquiring into something which is life with all its complex and varied problems. So we are sharing this thing together. The speaker is not here, and I want to make that quite clear, but rather together we are taking a journey into ourselves and demanding the excellence of ourselves. We are never challenged psychologically. We may be challenged outwardly. We may demand outwardly better materials, better workmanship, better schools, better politics. The challenge is for the better outwardly, always. But apparently, very few of us inquire and challenge ourselves the highest form of both intellectual, ethical, moral action, psychologically. And if we may, we are going to go into this question together, that we are challenging ourselves deeply, demanding the highest form of intellectual and, I would not like to use the word emotional, because that tends to become sentimental, but rather the highest form of affection, the highest form of love. And why is it that human beings who have lived for millennia upon millennia are living the way we are doing now? Confused, unhappy, miserable, uncertain, and outwardly in the world, as one observes, things are getting worse and worse and worse. The more you produce, the more we are using the things of the earth. We are destroying the earth. And inwardly, spiritually, if I may use that word, we have lost all sense of religious excellence. I'm using the word religious in the sense, not belief, not dogma, not rituals, not the varied form of hierarchical, theological assertions, but the religious person is one who has no self at all. That seems to me the highest form of religious action, where the me, the ego, the self doesn't exist at all. And that is the highest form of intelligence and excellence, ethically and in action. So we are going, if I may, into these problems. So you are not listening to a speaker, but rather listening to yourself and challenge yourself, not accepting anything but the highest form of clarity, highest form of behavior. And so, excellence in action. That's what we're going to go together into this question. So please, you are listening to yourself. You are listening not according to your particular like and dislike, including those, but actually listening to what is going on and demanding why we live as we do now in this appalling, frightening, destructive way we are living. Right? I think that is the most serious question we have to ask of ourselves. When outwardly everything is disintegrating. There's no question about it. Terrorism, which is the ultimate form of war. There's the terrorists, divided nations, all that's going on in the world. $400 billion a year spent on armaments. The world all over. So we are all crazy people. And to allow all this, each one of us must find out for oneself what is the right action with regard to all these external events. What is one to do, which must be correct, accurate, true. And that can only be found out for ourselves if we are challenging our actions, our way of life, which is jobs, occupation, relationship with each other, and the utter lack of clarity in the thought, the sloppiness of our thinking. And to live a totally different kind of life. Not merely based on pleasure, on fear, and so on. So we are going together, find all the, if we can, the answers to these questions for ourselves. If that is clear between you and the speaker is not here, if it is very clear on what we are with what we are concerned, then we have established a certain kind of relationship with each other. If we are all concerned with the same thing, not with our particular opinions and judgments or intellectual theories, but rather be concerned together, seriously, at least for today and for a few days while you are here. Concerned to find out a way of life that may bring a different world into being. Right? So that is our question. If we are going to inquire together, obviously the first step is to put aside all our personal prejudices, our personal desires, our petty problems of the moment, and so we have the capacity to inquire freely and deeply. Capacity doesn't come through constant practice, psychologically we are talking about. It comes when there is direct interest and the challenge to which you must respond with all your highest capacity. Then you have the capacity to inquire freely. Otherwise we'll barely be playing with words. The words are important because they convey a certain meaning. But if words drive us, if words force us into certain conclusions, certain actions, then language, words, control us, shape us, force us. That again is very clear. Isn't it? Either language uses us, or we use language. But most of us are driven by language. In the word communist, you have all kinds of fearful ideas. Not that the communists are not fearful. And if you say, I'm a British, immediately certain reactions arise. So, words, language drive us, shape us, shape our thinking, our behavior, our action. In realizing that, the slavery to language, but if we know how to use language, the exact meaning of words, the content and the significance of the depth of the word, then we are using the language unemotionally and sentimentally, not identified with a particular word. Then we can communicate with each other directly and very simply. If I stick to the word Hindu or an Indian, and that word shapes my thinking, my prejudices, my all that nonsense, then that the word Indian or Hindu forces me to act in a certain way. But whereas if I'm free of that word Hindu, it all is national, limited, superstitious significance, then I am free to understand the human being who is behind the word. Right? Are we meeting each other? At least I hope so. So, here we are using language, and the language is not using us. We are using the language unemotionally. Language which is pliable, correct, according to dictionary. So, we can both of us communicate with each other very simply and directly when we use the word unemotionally. Word which hasn't got tremendous psychological content behind it. Can we do this? For most of us it's extraordinarily difficult, because we have identified ourselves with the word, and the word is us. I'm a British, I'm a Hindu. Can we strip ourselves of this network of language which is driving us, shaping us, and unemotionally use words that are simple, direct, and therefore a word that doesn't bring about psychological reactions? Right? Can we do this, first of all? If we can, then we can inquire together. Because we are free of the word which drives us, but we are using the word directly. I hope this is clear. Am I making the thing clear? At least I hope so. Then we are begin. Then, knowing the meaning of words unemotionally, without any reaction to the word, then we can inquire into this whole problem of our way of living. Why we live this way? Why every day of our life is conflict, violent, selfish, narrow, limited, anxious, fearful, uncertain, a muddle in which we live? So we are challenging ourselves to find out why we live this way. Why we are mechanical in our relationship, in our ways of thinking. Why we tolerate any form of violence, both in ourselves and externally. Why, through man has lived for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, he lives in sorrow, without any love, frightened, miserable, utterly unintelligent. So, we're going to begin to inquire together, using words unemotionally, without any reaction. Find out why we have become so intellectually, ethically mechanical. Right? We are just stating facts, not conclusions. It's not a conclusion to say we are mechanical. We are. We are caught in a routine. Whether in the office or when you come home from your labors, exactly the same repetitive process goes on. Sexually, ethically, in our daily action. Some of us realize it and try to escape from them by becoming revolutionaries. Physical revolutionaries or ideological revolutionaries. Physical revolution doesn't bring about anything. That's so obvious. In spite of the terrorists. Psychologically, inwardly, inside the skin, as it were. Why have we become mechanical? I mean by that word mechanical, based on action, based on pleasure, action based on fear, action based on authority, action according to a certain pattern of thinking, action along evasion, avoiding, running away, and never facing the facts as we are. These are not conclusions. These are obvious daily facts. And again, please, you are listening to yourself. Though the speaker may express it, put it into words, and though the speaker is not here, you are listening to yourself and finding out, challenge yourselves, why we live this mechanical existence. We may leave one set of ideologies, Christian or communist, and join other set of ideologies. We may give up being a Catholic and become a Protestant or a Hindu, or if you are rather advanced, you go off into Zen Buddhism. Or if you are still more advanced, you go off into Krishnamurti stuff. So, it's all, you understand how never demanding for ourselves what is the right thing to do. Always depending on somebody. Gurus, this person or that person. So what is the right action in a world that's crumbling, that's becoming daily more frightening? Where there are so many divisions of beliefs, dogmas, nationalities and so on, so on, so on, religious and every form of division. What is the right action for each one of us in our daily life, with our occupations and so on? What is the right action? What is the correct way of living? If you challenge yourself, and I hope you are doing it now, what are you to do? So we have to inquire, what is action? Right? What do we mean by that word, action? Whether you are married, whether you are not married, whether you are at office, whether you are fairly well off and independent and so on, so on, so on. What is correct thing to do in my life? Facing all this. Not according to any pattern. Obviously, that's not correct action. Not based on certain ideologies. That also is not correct action, because those ideologies are projected by thought. Clever, cunning thought. And action based according to certain authority, whether religious, political, or your own particular authority based on your own experience and knowledge, that's neither correct action. Please understand all this. Because if you base your action on your own experience, then your experience is very limited. And you are constantly demanding greater and greater and greater experience, which is greater and greater sensation, not experience. The word experience means to go through, finish with something. And action based on a past conclusion, however right, however worthy, but is still from the past, and therefore still limited in terms of time. Or, if your action is based on a future conclusion, and a future ideology, or a future ideal, that again is not correct action, because you have projected the ideal, what you should be, what your country should be, or what your group should be, and act according to what should be. Therefore, you are not acting at all. Action implies doing something now, independent of the past and the future. This is really quite fascinating and tremendously interesting, if I may use these words, which are not correct words, but as meant for the moment, to find out for oneself, is there an action totally devoid of time? You understand? Time being the past with all my memories, knowledge, experience stored up in the brain as a memory and acting according to that memory, which is the past acting in the present. Or the past, which has had so many experiences, so many failures, so many anxieties, fears, sorrow, projects something in the future as ideological. What should be? How happy it would be? And act according to that, which again is non-action. Right? At least let's meet together intellectually. Then if we understand that intellectually, then we can go still deeper into it. At least we can understand each other at that level, which is very limited. Then, is there an action in daily life, in our daily relationship with each other, intimate or not intimate, sexual or not sexual? Is there an action which will be holistic, whole, which is not dependent on time, on environment, on circumstances? So we are challenging, is there such an action? Or we only know action based on the past or on the future. We don't know any other action. And we accept such action. It's much more convenient, more comfortable, easy to accept such action. So we are challenging each other to find out if it is possible to live a life of correct action, which is not dependent on environment, on circumstances, on the past or on the future. You understand, this most difficult thing to find out. When you want to find out such an action, if there is such an action, thought immediately begins to operate. Thought says, is there such a thing? I must inquire. So thought is the past, isn't it? Thought is the outcome of memory. Thought is the result of your experience, accumulated knowledge, and from that arises memory, and then from that, the reaction of that memory is thinking. That's simple, very simple if you go into it. It's not complicated. So, when we challenge it, when there is such a challenge as saying, is there action which is not dependent on the past or the future or environment, circumstances, then thought begins to operate. Right? That's what you're doing. Then thought says, I must find out such action. Since thought cannot find such action, you say that's impossible. You're following all this? Am I talking, we're all together in this, or am I talking to myself? I can do that in my room. But I don't anyhow, but so. So. Action based on thought is limited. Because thought in itself is a broken up thing, a fragment, limited, because it's based on knowledge. And knowledge, however much you may accumulate, however much you may accumulate facts, expanding knowledge over and over, expanding constantly, is still limited. That's obvious again. Perhaps not to the people who advocate the ascent of man through knowledge. because that's their particular form of conclusion. But when one sees actually in daily life how knowledge is so extraordinarily limited, you may have technological knowledge, and you must have, and that can to that knowledge more can be added. It can be constantly expanded. But is there the accumulation of psychological knowledge from which action takes place? You understand? Are we? All right. One has accumulated knowledge psychologically. I've been hurt many years ago as a boy or a girl. I've been hurt. And that hurt has become my knowledge. It's there inside my skin. And I act according to that knowledge, which is I resist. I isolate myself in order not to be hurt more. And so there's constant division between me and another to prevent being further hurt. And this is common fact again. So I act according to that knowledge. I may see the irrationality of it. I may go to psychologists. I may go all kinds of things about it. But the wound is still there. And that wound is responding all the time. So I'm acting according to a past incident. Whether that past incident is pleasurable or painful is irrelevant. But it is the past event which is my knowledge. I've had a lovely afternoon, that becomes my knowledge. I'm going to have a marvelous day tomorrow, and again, you follow, this whole process is based on the accumulative process of experience, desire, and pleasure. So, is there an action which is totally independent of all this? You understand my question? To inquire into that, the operation of thought must be understood. Because you can't stop thinking. If you force, as many people do through meditation, which is not meditation, try to control thought, shape thought, then they have divided themselves into the thinker who is superior and thought inferior. And so the superior tries to control the inferior. You own all this. So is there a way of an action which is totally divorced from all this? We are challenging you, I'm challenging you, and you are challenging me. Together, we are in a state of being challenged. Perhaps if you have challenged sufficiently, deeply and earnestly, and with all your being, then you will find an answer, which is, I will tell you, but don't We are discussing this together. We are sharing this together. Therefore, it's not, I'm not telling you and you're not accepting it. Because then it becomes futile. We might just well go to some guru. But whereas if you can discover this for yourself, then you are free. Then you understand you are something. You have understood action in all its full meaning and its depth and beauty of action. The speaker says, there is such an action, devoid completely from the past or the future, from environment, from circumstance. It is to have an insight into the total movement of thought as it expresses itself in the environment, circumstances, past and future, which is to have insight into action. That is, insight is not the response of memory. Hasn't it ever happened to you, suddenly say, I've understood it? Without words, without gestures, without circumstances, without past, you suddenly feel, but you have got it. And that is irrevocable. It is ultimate truth. You can't say, well, I've got it, next I've lost it. So we're going to find out together this meaning of this word, insight. To have an insight into something is not personal. Is not based on some ideological conclusions, memories, remembrances. One must be free of that to have an instant insight into something. One must be free of knowledge to have immediate perception. This is not something extravagant, exotic, or rather emotional, but actual, where, if you ever had this kind of immediate understanding and therefore immediate action, that immediate understanding demands immediate action, irrelevant of time. Hasn't it happened? So, yeah. It happens, obviously. But then thought says, I've had that insight. I've had that strange, deep perception and therefore from that immediate action. But I wish it would continue all the time. You understand? I want that insight, that immediate perception, immediate understanding to continue. When you say it must continue, you've already begun the whole movement of thought. I wonder if you see this. Insight, the quick perception of something is instantaneous and finished there. You can't carry it over. Whereas thought demands that you should be carried over. Therefore, prevents the next insight. I wonder if you get all this. Hello, sir. Have we understood something of this? Because it's very important. Because from this, we can go into something further where quick insight is demanded, so that you never have to struggle, never have to have conflict. Because when you are acting upon insight, it is an irrevocable truth. It's not intuition. Don't go away. We are using the word carefully. People have intuitions, which is their desire projected and made happy, you know, all that kind of ugly stuff. This is insight, but quick perception and action is not personal. Therefore, it is whole. It is holistic. And our actions are never whole. We do something, regret, I wish I hadn't done that. Or we have done something that gives us pleasure and we want more of that action. So whereas insight is something which is quite simple, but to have such an insight into things, one must have a quick mind. Not a dull mind. Not a mind that's frightened. But a mind, thought says, if I do that, what will happen? I might regret it, or there might be failure. It might bring about hurt to others and to myself. And so the action is never total, complete, whole. Whereas action, which is born out of insight, immediate perception, has no because it is actual. It is the only action. Now, with bearing that in mind, perhaps even intellectually, do you have a quick perception of what is the whole nature and structure of authority? Authority of books, authority of professors, authority of scientists, authority of the religious priests, authority of, and so on, so on. Or your own experience which has become your authority. To have an immediate insight. Then you are free of, totally of all authority. Then you don't have to fight and struggle to say, I accept this authority, I don't accept that authority. The authority of my guru is marvelous, but I rejected the authority of the priest. They're exactly the same thing. In discussing, in being challenged, in challenging each other, are you free of authority? There's the authority of the policeman, there's the authority of the law, the authority of the surgeon, that perhaps has its right place. But is there a psychological authority of a belief, of a dogma, of a conclusion, of an ideology, communist, socialist, whatever authority, religious, inwardly. If you have, then you will never find out what is right action. Obviously. Right? So in inquiring, step by step into this, are you actually, if I may most respectfully ask, free of authority, including the authority of this person sitting on the platform at this moment? If you are not find out why you accept authority inwardly. Objectively, you need authority. Right? You can't drive on the right-hand side in England. You have accidents. If you reject authority of some state laws, you will be punished, and so on, so on. There, authority has its right place. But inwardly, deeply, not to have any form of authority. Then we can proceed to inquire into why human beings live constantly in a state of fear. Right? Okay. Should we go into that? Why you, as a human being, who is the representative of all humanity, right? I wonder if you realize that. That you, as a human being, represent the entire human mind. Because you suffer. You're uncertain. You're caught in certain beliefs, or you're conditioned. You're British, you're French, you're German, or this or that. And you believe in this, in Jesus or Christ, or somebody else doesn't believe in that. And you are a Hindu, a Muslim, you follow? So are you aware that in your relationship, in your daily activity, there is a sense of great fear? Right? Is one aware of it? If one is, then to have, now look, if you have fear, the natural response, I won't call it natural, the irrational response is to cultivate courage, whatever that may mean, or to run away from it, or rationalize it. Why shouldn't I be afraid? It's natural, and so on and so on. Or you identify your fear and yourself, which is yourself and fear are one. It's not you separate from fear. So you, that fear, which is you, identifies itself with something greater and says, in that surrender to the greater, I've lost fear. We have played all these kind of games for centuries. And we still have fear. At the end of million years, every human being right through the world has some kind of fear. Now to have a quick insight into it, and therefore be totally free from it. Is that possible? Because fear is the most dreadful thing. It makes, you know, all the rest of what is the result of fear is. Neuroticism of every kind, escape into various forms of entertainment, religious and otherwise. Rationalizing fears and accepting fear as part of our daily existence. Now we're asking, is it possible to have a an insight into the whole nature and structure of fear and be free of it. Don't you want to know if you can be free of fear? Or do you accept, as we accept so many things, a part of life? If you don't accept it as part of life, then what is the nature of fear? What is the root of fear? What is the substance, the structure, the whole movement of fear? Not only fear of one's wife or husband, girl, you know, fear. In its entirety, not one particular form of fear. Don't you want to find out? In a sense, don't you want to give your mind, your thought, your being, your whole energy to find out whether it's possible to eradicate totally fear? Fear has many forms. One of the major factors of fear is attachment. Attachment to person, attachment to an ideal, to a belief, to attachment to a piece of furniture. You know what attachment is. And where there is attachment, there is inevitably the fear of losing. And is it possible to exist without isolating, without attachment? Understand my question? Is it possible for a human being who has lived 10,000 years and more, lived always in fear as part of his life, from the caveman till now, is it possible to uncondition himself from fear? As we said, one of the factors of fear is attachment. To find out if one is attached, not avoid it, not say, find out, to see if one is attached to something. Your guru, to your knowledge, to your furniture, to your friend, to your wife, girl, boy, or whatever it is. Attached to your country. Where there is attachment, there is jealousy. There is possessiveness. There is a sense of identifying oneself with something else. And when there is that attachment and identification, there is always uncertainty. Isn't that these are facts, aren't they? No? So, can you be free of attachment? Not tomorrow or when you are on the deathbed. Then, of course, it's very simple to be detached. You can't argue with death. But now, living our daily life, to be free of every form of attachment without becoming isolated. which again breeds fear. I may detach myself from this and from everything else and suddenly feel I am lonely. This sense of emptiness. And being frightened of that emptiness, begin again being attached not to a person but to some marvelous ideal. All that, in every form of attachment, brings fear. A man or a woman who really inquires and demands, challenges himself, he can ever be free of fear. Then we have to have a quick insight into the whole nature of attachment. Have you, as we are talking, exploring with each other, have you got this feeling, this insight, this immediate perception, then the whole nature of attachment and its structure with all the complications involved? See it instantly. And then when you see it in all its totality, it's finished. It doesn't mean you become callous. Doesn't mean you become isolated. On the contrary, you're a free human being who is no longer held down by fear. Right? That's only one expression of fear. Perhaps the deepest expression of fear, of losing what you have. Actually, you have nothing, but that's irrelevant. So, what is the root of all this fear? See, most of us are inclined to trim the branches of fear. Right? I'm afraid of this thing, therefore let me get rid of it. Or let me go to somebody who will help me to be free of fear, of that particular expression of fear. The psychologist, the priest, the analyst, the latest gurus and all that business. But we're not concerned with the trimming of the tree of fear, but rather to uncover the root of fear. So that when you see the root of it and have depth of understanding of the root, then if you have such an understanding and such an insight, then fear disappears completely. At all, you're no longer afraid psychologically. Physically is a different matter. Physically, one must be careful. One must be rational, sane. Unless you're extraordinarily neurotic, then that's a different matter. But physically, one must be watchful of danger, as you will be watchful of a precipice, as you will be watchful of a dangerous animal. And perhaps human beings are becoming more and more dangerous than any animal. So one has to be watchful of human beings, the terrorists, the politicians. Are there any politicians here? And very watchful of gurus, and so on and on and on. So, one understand the watchfulness, the danger, physical. But, what is the root of psychological fear. Please challenge, ask yourself. Don't accept my challenge. Ask yourself, what is the root of all? Don't say, I don't know, and just leave it like that. Or draw some conclusion. If you do, it will prevent you from finding out the root of it. If you say, I really don't know, right, what the root of the fear is, then you start with humility. Then you say, I really don't know, but I'm going to find out. But if you start with the arrogance of saying, I can solve it, I know, I have all the facts about fear, then you are starting with a conclusion, with a sense of hope, which doesn't mean you must be in despair to ask it, but if you are really deeply concerned with the nature and the structure of fear at its very depth, what is the root of fear? Those of you who have read or heard the speaker before, don't say, yes, I know it. That's a cheap trick. Because you have heard somebody tell you that. And that may be the truth, but it's not the truth. It's somebody else's. There is no your truth or my truth. But if you accept a statement made by somebody like this person and say, yes, I've heard that before, but it hasn't got rid of my fear, then you are living, then language is driving you. You understand? Language is driving you. Language is using you. But if you are free of what you have heard before, but actually demand now as you are sitting there to find out what's the essence, the root, the basis of all fear, then as you don't know, you come to it afresh. You come to it with a certain sense of curiosity to find out. But if you come to it already with some conclusion, there is no possibility of your understanding the root of it. So let's find out together, afresh, what's the root of this whole nature and the structure of fear. When you want to find out, if you have a motive, that is, I must be free of fear, which is a motive, then that motive gives a direction to your inquiry. So, the motive which gives a direction prevents you from inquiry. This is simple, isn't it? If I have a motive, in order to inquire into fear, because I want to get rid of fear, then I've already given a direction to it. Right? Because my desire is to get rid of it. Not to understand the nature and the structure and the depth of fear. I only want to get rid of the word fear. So, the word fear is driving us. You understand? Whereas if you look at it, if you are free of the word and say, what is this fear which I have lived with for so long? What is it? Is it time? time being, yesterday, today and tomorrow. Sun setting, sun rising. Which is fear the result of time? Something happened which was fearful a year ago or yesterday, and that fear of that incident remains. And the memory of that fear, of that thing, is called fear. You following all this? The memory of that incident which took place here or yesterday has left a certain remembrance, and that remembrance says there is fear. Right? So, recollection of a word called fear, we say that is fear. Whereas we are trying to find out, being free of the word, what is the essence of it? Are you following all this? Is it getting too tiresome, all this? Okay. What's the root of it? I say to myself, because I'm a very serious person, and I've got plenty of energy, I must find it out. But I don't want to live with fear. It's too absurd. Too illogical. Irrational. What is the essence of it? Is it time? It's partly there. Time. And also, is fear responsible for, is thought creating fear? You understand? So, time, thought. I've understood more or less the nature of time. Time externally, time inwardly, psychologically. I will be, I am not, I will be, or I should be, whereas I am not. The should be is the movement of time, right? I wonder if this is following all this. It's a nice morning, and I hope you are enjoying this too. I hope you are having a pleasant, happy time in this inquiry, as you would have a pleasant time sitting on the lawn and looking at the trees and the clouds and the warm sunshine. So what is thought then? I've understood the nature of time. Now I want to understand if thought is responsible for fear. I don't know, but I'm going to find out. If thought is responsible, I must understand the whole nature of thought. What is thinking? Thinking is the response of memory. Right? Obviously. If you had no memory at all, you wouldn't think. But thinking has become very important for us. We apply thinking to everything we do. Is love a remembrance, a thought? I'm not talking about sexual love, sensation, the sensuous love, I won't even call that love. It's sensation. Is love sensation? Is love a remembrance? And is thought love? You understand, I'm asking all this. And what is the nature of thought? Very simply, it is based on the accumulation of knowledge gathered through experience of millennia living, which is stored up in the brain. I'm not a brain specialist, you can watch yourself. In the brain, and the memory responds to a challenge. Now, I'm challenging myself. What is thinking? And so it says, memory, of course. So, is memory responsible for fear? I've been hurt physically last year. I remember that. And I'm afraid it might come back again, the disease or the pain or whatever it is. That is the thought based on an experience of last year's or yesterday's pain, remembering it and being frightened of it, that it mustn't happen again. Or thought all on which all our action, all our existence is based on thought. I don't know if you have realized this extraordinary fact. Everything that we do is based on thought. There is no spontaneity. That's quite a different existence, to be spontaneous. To have that spontaneity, one must understand the nature of thought, which has conditioned our brain, our whole mental outlook, our activity. When there is an understanding, immediate insight into this, then there is spontaneity, there is freedom. But that's quite a different matter. So we are asking, time, I see, is partly responsible. Thought is also responsible. Is time thought? Or thought is time? You understand? They are not time and thought separate. There is only thought which creates psychological time. Right? And therefore, having gone into the depth of it, understood it, not intellectually, verbally, but actually seen for oneself the nature of thinking, then one realizes thought is basically responsible for fear. Then one says, how can then I stop thinking? Which is the most absurd question. See, that's part of the trick of what the gurus have brought, which is meditate, try to control thought, stop thought. Have you ever tried to stop thinking? If you have, you'll find out that the person who says, I must stop thinking, the entity that says that is also part of thought. He's playing a trick upon itself. So, you see, time is thought. Time is movement. Movement. From yesterday, today, tomorrow. And also thought is a movement. movement based on a past memories, past experiences, past knowledge. Knowledge is always the past. So, thought is basically responsible for fear. Understand? Now, is the word identified, is the word fear, fear, you understand? Is the word fear, actual fear? Or the word is not that thing? He says, I'm getting all too tired. You understand my question? Is the word different from the thing? Or is the word creating that thing, fear? Then the word is driving you, and the word is creating the fear. Or is there fear independent of the word? Which is, the word is not the thing. Right? You understand? So have you separated the word from the thing? You understand? The tent, the marquee, the word is not that. Right? So, when you look at it, can you separate the word from the thing? You understand my question? So, have you separated the word from the reaction, which you call fear? So, which means, are you aware that you are caught in the network of words? And therefore, the words are driving you. So can you look at the thing without the word? Which means, look at that thing without naming it, which becomes the word. I wonder if you understand all this. Look, this requires great alertness, great awareness of your observation. Isn't just accepting, yes, I can separate the word on this and that, play around. But actually to see that you are caught, your observation is through a word. And therefore the word becomes all important. So you're in realizing that, you say, all right, I'm separate word, put it away. Let me look at the thing itself. Not with the word interfering with it, the word with all its connotations, its contents. Let me look at that thing. Do you understand? I'm expending a lot of energy. I hope you are too. So, can you look at fear, the word, the actual sensation without the word? Or the word is creating the sensation. The name, fear, is creating that. You understand? You can look at the marquee, the word, and the fact, the tent, differently. You can separate it. You see, yes, I can look at it without the word. I can see the lines, I can see the posts, without the word. But to do that psychologically is much more, one has to be extraordinarily alert. To be so deeply aware of the meaning, the word, and the thing. Now, if you are, then the thing you're looking Without the word, is it fear? You understand what I'm trying to say? The reaction which you have named as fear, if you don't name it, is that fear? Is there fear? Which you can only answer, which you have come to that after investigating, understanding time and thought. Thought is time, because both are movement. Time is movement. Thought is movement. So they are not two separate things. Thought creates psychological time. So, thought has created the word, the original man or the ape or the primate, say, I'm afraid. The fear has gone for a ride down to us. And now we're asking, separate the two, word and the sensation, the reaction. And look at the, observe the reaction. Without the word. Now, when you observe the reaction, is the observer different from the reaction? You understand? Or they are both the same. The observer is the observed. The reaction is the observer. Right? I see you don't, some of you. You've been angry. Is that anger different from you? You're only aware of that. At the moment of anger, you're not. But a second or minute later, you say, I have been angry. You have separated yourself from that thing called anger. And so there is a division. Similarly, is the reaction which you call fear different from you? Obviously, it's not. So, you and that reaction are the same. When you realize that, you don't fight it. You are that. Right? I wonder if you see it. Then, a totally different action takes place, which is, before you have used positive action with regard to fear, say, I must not be afraid, I will deny it, I will control it, I must do this and that about it. Go to psychology, you know, all the rest of it. Now, when you realize, when there is the fact, not realize, when there is the fact that you are the reaction, there is no you separate from that reaction. Then you can't do anything, can you? I wonder if you realize you can't do anything. Therefore, a negation, a negative, a non-positive observation is the ending of fear. Right? What time is it? 1 o'clock. Forgive me for talking an hour and a half. I didn't realize it. I hope you're on board, you're on stiff, sitting in the same position.
Don't be afraid, we enjoyed it.
Good. We'll meet tomorrow again.